This podcast is brought to you by eHarmony, the dating app to find someone you can be yourself with. Why doesn't eHarmony allow copy and paste in first messages? Because you are unique, and your conversations should reflect that. eHarmony wants you to find someone who will get you. How are you going to know who gets you? If people send you the same generic conversation starters, they message everyone else. Conversations that actually help you get to know each other. Imagine that. Get who gets you on eHarmony. Sign up today.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com. One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about UnitedHealthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Force Center podcast feed, and this episode is Questions of the Force. I'm Joseph Scrimshaw.
I'm Ken Napstock. I sometimes have answers from the Force.
We love answers from the Force. Someday we'll do a very special episode that's just reading questions, and then there'll be a quiet space for everyone to think. It's a real Jedi meditation version of Questions of the Force. But for this episode, we're going to have some answers, or thoughts at least. As always, want to let you know that today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. You can get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/forcecenter. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. This week, we are recommending Master and Apprentice by Claudia Gray. It is a great insight to young Obi-Wan Kenobi. A lot of great Kenobi stories coming, but this is one of our favorites. So if you want to check out Master and Apprentice and give it a listen, you can get your free audiobook by going to audibletrial.com/forcecenter. One more time, that's audibletrial.com/forcecenter for your free audio book. Ken, are you ready for some questions?
I am so ready for questions, sir.
Excellent. We always get two from Twitter and two from our patrons on Patreon. We go first to Twitter and Daniel Mormack. And Daniel says, if you woke up one day in Star Wars, what species, can't say human, faction, era would you be? Also, would you be born on their homeworld or somewhere else? If Jedi or Sith, what color is your lightsaber? This is absolutely great. Mm. Ken, I know you've done some role-playing. I've done a decent amount of role-playing in my life. This feels like roll up your Star Wars character. Design your Star Wars character. You know, do you get initiative? Where do you spend your points? So I love this question. And I love the specification that we can't say human. Interesting thought experiment of like, what body do I want to have? So,
yeah.
Where do you go with all this? What, your species, your faction, your era? Are you a Jedi? Where are you born? All that stuff.
Yeah, this is a great question. I challenge myself to push past any gut reaction answer, right? You know, it might be Ewoks. So I can hang out with my boy Chirpa. No, no, I want to, you know, where can I go that I don't often go? And I went with Abed-Netto, which is I'll learn to say it, New Republic era. Why? Because there's so many cool pilots with cool musical reference names, music reference names, not musicals, not Hello Dolly references. Though that'd be a great name. Hello Ollie. And then I do love, you know, that it's a planet in the colonies region of the Corellian Run. That's kind of a cool place to be born. And I say New Republic so you could kind of join that fight. Now, I myself am not super athletic part, love sports, but not like, I don't see myself as a cool X-Wing pilot. So it would have to be, you know, a little clunky, grumpy Y-Wing pilot, not a tattletale. Not a tattletale like Slow and Low over there on Canto Bite. But, you know, I'd be next Eloatsy and next to Poe.
Nice, nice. You could be named X Harrison after Rex Harrison if you wanted to be musical.
Yeah, love
Would you want to continue the Beastie Boys theme? Would you want your name to just be No Sleep Till Brooklyn? Nothing cute about it. Your full name is just No Sleep Till Brooklyn.
With some apostrophes and weird dashes. No way sleep to Brooklyn. Yes, I could get behind that there.
Yeah.
Absolutely get behind it.
So you'd want to be a Y-Wing pilot?
Yeah.
And are you just kind of adding everything in there? Are you a Force user as well? Or are you just like, nope, I'm good with my Y-Wing?
I'm good with my Y-Wing. Yeah, having being in tune to the Force seems like a lot of hard work, dedication, and responsibility as opposed to just flying a Y-Wing around and occasionally going, Poe? You know, which these characters are much more than that, of course. In fact, in the Poe Dameron comic, you could spend a lot of time with these characters, a couple Abed-Netto fighters. So, yeah, that's where I'd be. I'd just be a part of the New Republic. You know, again, resistance. Yeah, I think the resistance is forming. And I think I'd want to leave the New Republic military with Poe and Eloatsy to join up with Leia's army.
Okay. All right. You would go with your friends to fight the good fight in your Y-Wing. Now, in terms of, I think I love all the cultural reasons that you want to be an Abed-Netto. Does it sound good to physically be an Abed-Netto? Or is there something where you're like, yeah, it'd be great to have a head like that? Physically, how do you imagine being one?
Well, as someone who has an abnormally large head, I have to special order baseball caps. You know, the largest size you got, go larger. I think it just is. I think something about it. It just feels right. It just feels, you know, they take up a cockpit. Like they're in there, you know? You know what I mean? Take up a lot of space. I'm clumsy. I knock things over. Can't fit into my podcast recording studio now is just jam packed with too many things right now because I have too many things I'm trying to do in the studio.
It's not like a room anymore so much as it's like a large suit you wear to do podcasts, right?
Yeah. The last time you actually were here about 2 years ago in the studio, it doesn't look like that anymore. The chairs are tangled, tables at an angle, so I feel like I'm squished into a Y-Wing cockpit.
Well, that is just a great picture to imagine you getting into that Y-Wing with your cool name. I'm always going to answer Jedi, at least partially. It's a lot of work, a lot of responsibility, but come on, it's fun to help people and move things with your mind, right? So I would want to be a Jedi. I would want to be a Jedi in, doesn't have an official name yet because we don't have any storytelling for it yet, but the assumed, new Jedi order started by Rey and possibly Finn. I do like that idea of being aware, a lot of great guidance from Rey and from Finn and, being aware of the legends of the past and the truth of them and kind of having that bold new frontier. I think that is, if I had to choose anything I would want to choose, the just open possibilities, the absolute horizon of that. Since I'm a Jedi, I would want a blue blade. Blue is my favorite color. I think Luke and Kenobi's lightsabers probably have something to do with that from a very young age. But I'd want a weird kyber crystal that it starts out like a really light, brilliant blue, and then it slowly gets darker as I get older.
Oh, I love that.
So by the time I'm like, by the time I'm really, really pushing it, old Jedi has got this like, is that blue or is that black? Like, it's technically a very dark blue.
I love that.
Yeah, that'd be a really fun idea to watch yourself age via kyber crystal. And then I was really challenged by the species, right? Because there's the temptation to just answer in a jokey way. I almost just cheated by going Pantorn or Mirlin. Like, Pantorn, that's a fascinating culture. And I like blue. I'll be blue. Or I like the Mirlin culture that's really into the Force, that really respects it. I love that detail where, like, Vernestra Rowe got us, like, is celebrated for being taken at a young age to join the Jedi. So, like, that would be great to come from a supportive culture. And like how Vernestra reflects on, like, that really helped me out. Not everybody has that. So I was tempted, but I wanted to just go true alien instead of human with, you know, different tattoos and tones. And I really tried to think about what body would I enjoy having. And I was shocked to discover that, Ken, I would like to be a small Wookiee.
A small Wookiee.
Because I'm just the clothing options. That's great. The strength would be great. The fur. I'm not a furry, and there's nothing wrong with that. I don't want to be making any jokes. But, like, look. That seems like a fun way to be. Like, it just seems fun to be furry.
Yes.
Furry, lots of teeth, and a lot of roaring. And we know that a lot Wookiees are kind, right? But they get to roar a lot, and I would love to roar.
Yes. Yes. And so I love this blade. You would a nice wood blade, you said? Or wood
oh,
wood
you help? Didn't even get into that. But yeah, no, I would go full Gungi and try to have some sacred wood on the hilt of my blade for sure. Yeah. And maybe I'd be the first Wookiee who wears pants, even though he doesn't need to, just to be like, but I wanna.
One of my underrated things that I love about Chewbacca is his satchel. I think a good Jedi Wookiee satchel would work for you as well.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I would happily have a satchel. I have a bag that I got for the first time I went to San Diego Comic-Con. It's like my little my little Chewy satchel. I would love that satchel. But I want to be a small Wookiee because I realized when I thought about being a Wookiee, it feels I am average height, but in our culture, average height means short through the way people treat you or speak to you. But I'm used to that. So it'd be fun if people were like, well, yeah, he's a mighty Wookiee. It's just a DNA thing. He's shorter than normal. He's smaller.
Yeah.
I'd like to be a short Wookiee. I don't know why, but there you go.
I'm on board with that.
Excellent.
Well, I'll fight my Y-Wing to defeat the Final Order, and then you can join the Jedi Order that emerges after that, and we can form a complete story here.
Yeah, and then we can do a podcast, Wookiee and Abed Netto's Takes. Love it. All right. Great question, Daniel. We'll move on to our question from Bradley Tussing. Bradley says, hello there. Let's speculate responsibly. In honor of my favorite character, Obi-Wan, how do you see the confrontation between Kenobi and Vader playing out? We know the fates of both. What do you think will happen in the actual duel? Thanks and keep up the great work. We've talked about this a little bit, but it's always in this great stew of Kenobi talk. And I love how direct Bradley's question is of, like, the duel. What's going to happen in the duel? So, Ken, how are you feeling about the duel? Do you have theories or hopes?
Yes, and that's why we're here, right? But I'm trying to...
No. Nah, I don't really care about that.
No, I care so much, and I know that's kind of the focal point of it here, and I think, because it goes from almost the cute of, I'd love to get some sort of answer of why Vader felt that when they met again, he was like, hey, last time you were the master, I was a learner, but we're going to switch that around this time. And if it's going to be come out of this... And how do you, you know, that's kind of a cute canon thing, and meaning like, oh yeah, maybe we'll get that answer, but I will want that to be big. So that is some sort of what kind of emotional defeat does Vader suffer here is the way I'm kind of looking at that. It can't necessarily be physical. It's not going to, you know, even if Kenobi going to chop off another, you know, limb and just that one gets repaired. Like it just that those are repeated beats. It's got to be something that's like Kenobi feels like we've been talking about. Like I got to, there's nothing I can do. This chapter is turned, but like Vader, and he's not fully formed and all that kind of stuff. Is this a big final emotional scar on him? And that's what happens. I just don't know how to, maybe I just don't know how I want to see that in a physical confrontation. I would love a lot of chance in the fight for conversation, you know?
Yeah.
A lot of, you know, slash. Have you thought more about what I said?
Well, I mean, that's really like the Bespin duel between Vader and Luke, right? There are like, there are phases to it. There are phrases to it. There's like a lot of storytelling. It's not just like the one and done 5-minute fight, right? It travels, and what's at stake beat to beat travels.
Yeah, absolutely. The Bespin fight's a great way to look at it. You know, and they're not going to have tea. It's not Kenobi and General Lothsam, but just there's got to be that. There has to be that of just, you know, them knowing what's going on in the fight versus just hacking and slashing.
Yeah, it's got to be an emotional battle or a physical battle. You know, it's got to be both in some way, maybe even separated. We'll see how it gets constructed. But yeah, it's hard to think about just the physical fight without thinking about what is the story. And I'm so glad you brought up the A New Hope line, because it is like the big asterisk, I think, for a lot of fans of the when I left you, I was but the learner. Now I am the master. And seeing if they're just going to handle that, like Lucas himself has demonstrated in the past that he'll be like, yeah, I don't care.
Right. Yeah.
Right. I don't care if you interpreted this, you know, ambiguous line or even a really specific line in this specific way. headcanon it up. You know, I want Maul back. Figure it out. Like. So I wonder if it'll just be like headcanon it up, fans, or, you know, somebody tries to kind of make it work in a novel, as authors often do, try to acknowledge a little thing like that. Or if it will, if they'll contextualize that line to be Vader is talking about when I left the Jedi Order and was a Sith. I was but the learner. When we, is he talking about Mustafar and this is something different, or are they going to try to contextualize it so that line is referring to this fight?
Yeah. And I don't know if it's like 100% need, right? Of even just not the fight, but the series. I think you're probably in the same boat too, just based, you know, again, what you're saying about Lucas, and we're just kind of almost used to that as Star Wars fans. But it'd be interesting to see that play out, I guess, more than a need for me.
Yeah. I think the line that I'm more interested in from the A New Hope fight is one of my favorite Vader lines, which works great, is a great space fantasy over the top talk, but also is funny in the way it's phrased in real world perspectives of Vader saying, "Your powers are weak, old man." In the way weak has become a slightly different context. Weak. Yeah. But your powers are weak, old man, is that's new to me, you know?
I think you're absolutely right. That there's something Vader's discovering in that moment. 100%. 100%. Yeah.
So I think this is not either of them at their absolute peak, but in the Kenobi show, but I think it is, like we were talking about, I don't think it's going to be about like the speed of the Mustafar fight, but I think it's physically, it's going to be about power. Or I shouldn't say it's going to be. I think it would be cool. I hope it would be awesome if it were about like, we have big, powerful moves, powerful leaps, powerful chops, throwing huge things at one another, power, as opposed to speed, since that's the way Vader fights anyway. And if Obi-Wan can kind of match him that way. So that's one thought about just kind of physically, how do they fight? How do they tell that story? How do you give room for his powers to become weak? And then in terms of the narrative of it, this is maybe prediction, but more hope. Something that I think would be interesting for me. I think Obi-Wan has won both the big screen duels against Vader. He physically defeated him on Mustafar, and I think he realized he was having an entirely different fight than Vader was on the Death Star, and the fight ended exactly the way Kenobi wanted it to, right?
Yeah.
So he's beat him, in my opinion, in my interpretation, both times, and he's done that by knowing his opponent and knowing what he, Obi-Wan, truly wants out of the fight, right? Mm-hmm. So I think if that, if it's kind of framed the same way, I'd be really interested if this emotional battle and a physical battle is starting from a place of Obi-Wan tries to get through to him, because I think mm-hmm. that is really important to Obi-Wan once thought as you did, to Obi-Wan believing that Anakin is gone and that being a truth for him. So I would love it if the fight starts with Obi-Wan tries to get through to Vader, maybe gets close, but something concrete mm-hmm. happens that makes Obi-Wan believe it is not possible. You know, mm-hmm. if I failed back in the day because I didn't save Anakin and I didn't stop Vader, well, I tried to save Anakin and that's not going to work. So I'm going to try to stop you physically and then you can get this big fight. But then I think at some point, I think it would be cool if Vader is more powerful and Obi-Wan realizes I'm at risk of getting myself physically killed. Mm-hmm. And for what? Then Luke will have no one.
Yeah.
And put Obi-Wan like mid-fight into choosing the future, choosing to be there mm-hmm. for Luke. Mm-hmm. Or he could obsess on his own past and his own failures by trying to stop Vader when he knows the odds are against him, just power-wise. So yeah. I think you could have a story where Vader is physically dominant, mm-hmm. but Obi-Wan once again wins the fight based on what his goal is.
Yeah.
Which at some point in the fight becomes escape, live mm-hmm. to be there for Luke, live for the future, live for my commitment to this new mission, let go of the past.
Yeah, this idea of this kind of real victory for Kenobi, and I love I'm hearing you describe it, and the idea that as big and badass as Vader is, that he never gets the technical win, he always keeps coming up short to Kenobi in any ways. But I love, and all this you actually get me excited. Again, we do this every now and then, and you especially do this on Kenobi conversations. You get me so excited for something that we're just both dreaming up. We track the themes, yeah. And this all makes sense. The idea of the actual decision having to kind of be made in Kenobi's heart, soul, and mind, and maybe body of, I could maybe continue to pursue this thing against Vader, maybe get the win here, maybe I save the galaxy, I don't know, maybe I right a wrong, but is that about me? Is that about my ego? Or do I have to give that all up again for this future, for this new hope? Because maybe I die in the death or as well. Maybe I, you know, maybe that's how he could win maybe I could take both of us. So whatever it actually is, I love what you're suggesting there of a lot of it having to come back onto Kenobi of even in this fight, I have to make the choice for the future. That's yeah. pretty cool.
In realizing it's, you know, there's so many great stories in Star Wars about why we fight. And if Obi-Wan has this sort of realization of like, I am trying to defeat him, yeah, to save the galaxy, but also, or at least partially save the galaxy, because Palpatine's still there. But I'm realizing I'm making it about me. This is about me fixing my broken heart, fixing my mistake. And instead, I should be there for others. I should be there for Luke instead of making this about me.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. And yeah. And what it, yeah, just the way we're going to, all of us can take that back to our own lives.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Why am I doing this? And, you know,
yeah. Why am I getting angry in this situation? Who is it for? Is it my ego or is it the situation? Why am I going after this person? Is it for to defeat them or am I defeating myself? That's powerful Star Wars stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And we know that he's got to come to this place of some amount of peace at the end. And how does he get that victory? Right. And how do you answer that question that a lot of people have had since the original trilogy of like, I mean, Yoda and Obi-Wan get off their asses. Yeah. And to see him, like, I tried and it would have been putting the future at risk, you know?
Yeah.
Which also brings me to another thing that we that comes up in this conversation. I think a lot of people hope for a Qui-Gon appearance.
Oh, right.
And I think it might be really fascinating if however Obi-Wan makes it through this confrontation with Vader, however he comes to a real sense of peace and purpose about I'm being a great Jedi Knight just by watching over Luke and protecting the future. Is that what he needs to unlock the ability to truly connect with Qui-Gon? Is, mm-hmm. you know, is Qui-Gon in the first couple episodes as, you know, a great mm-hmm. Force spirit exposition, or is Qui-Gon the victory at the end. He's been trying for 10 years to master this ability to commune with Qui-Gon. And only when Obi-Wan becomes at peace with himself can he begin to connect with Qui-Gon.
Ooh, that's a Force Center. Ooh, excited. based on your Force Center, well said. Yeah, you phrased it. You said like a reward, but I love just what you've been clogged, man. For 10 years, you've been living in this cave on a blanket and a pillow. You don't even allow yourself a hut, whatever's going on. It, you know, it could be a timeline story. I get that. But like, man, and then you're clear of all this. You're clear of all that. You've let it go. You've truly moved past it. Man, again, Star Wars therapy, life lessons, the importance of telling these stories. That would work for me.
Yeah, and the story of becoming a Force spirit has always been about, the Sith cling to life. The Jedi allow themselves to move on and retain the ability to have their identity within the Force so that they can continue to help others. So it makes a lot of sense that if Obi-Wan comes to peace with that's his role in relationship to Luke, that he would accomplish that after the Vader confrontation.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Anyway, great, great question. A lot of Kenobi thought starters, and there'll be even more. But for right now, we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back to talk about maybe some more Kenobi and other things in Star Wars, too. What? Back in a moment.
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Stem.
And we are back to continue our questions and answers of the Force. I will caveat. I've been trying to caveat, Ken. I love caveats. But with the Kenobi stuff, I get so excited that I always want to caveat that, like, this is how I'd maybe approach it, you know, as a writer in these ideas. But I always want to just say, like, these are just thoughts. These are just excitement. I could absolutely be dead wrong. And yeah. I will embrace whatever story is told. I just kind of feel a responsibility when we get really excited about an idea to not get attached to, but I figured it out and this is the way it should be, but to be open to whatever story is told.
Yeah, no, hey, absolutely. I think we're constantly tested with our own engaged with the story presented idea. It's a good lesson for us always.
A good lesson for always. All right. So we have cues and lessons of the Force, but now we're going to move on to our questions from our patrons on Patreon. We go first to Jay Winkworth. Jay says, much like Ken, I have an affinity for Imperial officers. I just find them more relatable than the Rebels. Jerk bosses, brown nosers, employees promoted who probably didn't deserve it, incompetence, backstabbing, people putting their own wants and needs ahead of the group goal. Really reminded me of my days as a manager at a big box retailer. I've always loved Tarkin and Piet, and Jar Jar just strike me as a guy who's there for the benefits in the employer 401k contributions, which I can relate, says Jay. Anyway, I don't have anyone in my Star Wars circle who's a big fan of Imperial officers, so I don't get to talk about it ever. So I'm just going to post a few questions here, but please feel free to go wherever your thoughts take you. What resonates with you about Imperial officers? What are your favorite stories, moments with them? Are there specific stories you haven't seen that you want to? Thanks in advance. I know I've come to the right place. Indeed you have, Jay. Great question and great analysis of the Imperials. Ken, where do you go? You've had a lot of time to reflect on it. What are you feeling now is your attraction to the Imperial officers?
That's a great question. You put now. As a kid, I almost scared to analyze why I love them so much. There's something about, quite frankly, we always say the Empire had cooler toys in a literal sense, like the cooler toys. I collected Cobra. I collected Empire stuff more than Rebels. I don't know why, where that comes from. And then you start looking at the history of nice uniforms out there that the world shouldn't be paying attention to, if you know what I mean. So I almost don't want to dig in, but there's something about it. Something about Jar Jar. I just found sympathy for him, and it might be, you know, the guys just would, I believed him. He was like, I can't do my job. You're not giving me the tools. I don't care. You got to do the job. Oh, damn it. Okay. I don't know. There's something about that. And then I always talk about the Return of the Jedi novel. You get into his head a lot more. He has that quote of great men never hurry. Great men cause others to hurry. I don't even know if I have that super philosophy now in life, but as a kid, I was like, that sounds great. sounds like great. So, but from that starting point, Jay's saying all of the reasons I kind of love it. Now it is about the office climb, how you work and who you work for and at what level do you sacrifice what you believe in for the bigger goal? Do you know even why you're here? I love the deleted scenes of Jar Jar faced with having to blow up his own men on Endor and all that stuff. Like, that's big stuff. So all that boils down to like Krennic. Krennic really kind of opened up that side of it where, do I think he's a completely evil person? I think he is now. I don't know if he always started out that way, but his ambitions and the lessons of your ambitions. And that's why we talk about Catalyst so much as being a good book. And over the years, Catalyst has kind of become this punchline of a book, like, oh, you didn't like Rogue One, you need to read Catalyst. I even have friends that still joke about that. And it's not fair to Catalyst or Rogue One. But it's part of that is seeing where Krennic came from. It wasn't someone who's like, oh, I'd like a red lightsaber. It's like, no, I'd like to be acknowledged for the job. I think I'm doing well. The job happens to be building a weapon that will destroy planets and wipe out millions, but it's my job. I'm doing well. And how you can be consumed by that. And that's kind of all boils down to him being killed by the very weapon he was creating and the very weapon, your life being taken by your own ambitions. That's why in the end, that Vader line, the dad joke line, like over the years, but I think I have less fire about that line being bad because it's kind of true.
Yeah, no, I don't like the pun, but a good theme statement, Vader.
Yeah. I'm with you on the pun, but yeah. So anyways, that's where I start and maybe go with all that.
Yeah, no, I would agree with a lot of that. I think Jay laid it out really well. Like, I really liked the Imperials. I loved my Imperial Officer action figure as a kid, the Kenner one that I really just thought was Piet always. It was Piet to me. And it just the flat blackness was fascinating. You know, you talk about not wanting to, you know, maybe idolize the uniforms because they are drawn from real world fascism. That's what it means. But it is still fascinating. I think that's one of the powers of Star Wars, is to look at scary ideas that have, you know, that are pulled from the real world in real humanity and real dangers, and to look at very scary things, but put them in this package where it's safe to play with them, sometimes literally. And I think the connection that Jay's making, that you're making, is what I really make, is we can see, obviously, real world fascism, super scary, but we can also see these choices where people kind of say, look, I'm a cog in the machine. No one can control the machine. The machine's just doing what the machine does, and I am trying to profit by it or, you know, survive it. But it can't be changed. It shouldn't be changed. You know, like, I think for Krennic, this idea of like, yeah, he's not like, let me go find the ancient holocrons and learn the power of fury. Like, he's like, I have a good government job, and I'm going to build a defensive weapon for our government, which we need. And all around him, it's becoming obvious that it is a massive gun to control people through fear. And he's just kind of flipping about it. You know, you get that, you get that energy, like that great line with Galen, where it's, you know, you're confusing peace with terror, I think he says. And Krennic says, you got to start somewhere. It's a funny line, but it's funny because it's that sort of like, the big picture isn't my problem. I am a cog in the machine, and I want to be a great cog in the machine who gets rewarded. And you are a naive fool for thinking it should be different. The world's the world. It's the cynicism of it, you know? So I love that about Krennic. And then, you know, I think there's also just this great thing that Jay is connecting to, of this very real world of like, in particular, my time at Kinko's, other jobs, but because it was a corporation, I feel like I could break down various people I met into Tarkin, Piet, Ozzel. Right. Veers. And you see you see all those people who are, you know, cogs in machines who are about power. Right. And about, you know, control. And like, Tarkin is a cruel, awful person, but great at his actual job. And then Piet is savvy and knows how to handle the boss. He knows how to give the boss bad news and sweep the right things under the rug and blame other people. And then Ozzel is this, you know, blowhard who is born on third base and doesn't know it. And, you know, when you start looking at each Imperial officer that way, I think most people could go like, yeah, I work with that person at radio. I work with Tarkin at Radio Shack, you know?
That would be where he worked. Absolutely love that. Yeah, and connecting to that. And I remember, you know, Empire was the last one I took in as a kid, like really, you know, knew what I was watching. And so it was a weird order for Imperial officers. I was scared and terrified and also obsessed with Ozzel's demise and Piet watching it, gulping and just going, oh, cool, I have the job now. I better take it. Like, I don't know if that set me up for what joining the workforce was. Like, the person in front of you dies, just take his job.
I mean, it is this sort of a winner take all, you know. And that just Piet's the performance is so amazing. You can see the ambition, but you can also see the like, if this works out great, you know, I'm gonna get such a wonderful retirement package, but if not, I'm going to be just murdered.
That's it.
It's one or the other. One or the other. Talk about sacrificing for your job. Like, Piet needed like a good Twitter thread to say, you are not your job, Piet. So we were talking off air. Jay's question is so great about favorite story moments. And I found myself writing down like five. And I was like, hey, wait, maybe we should do an episode of Star Wars Ranked. So maybe we'll talk more about favorite Imperial moments. So as to contain ourselves here. But what is a favorite moment of Imperial storytelling for you?
I think it might be, the Piet promotion. But I've also been, it's the why bury the lead. I terrified as a kid. I'm now connecting like work trauma to Empire Strikes Back more than I ever really realized. When Nita apologizes or says he's going to apologize, I just remember thinking, well, that's the right thing to do. That's the right thing. That's what you would teach your kids. You made a mistake. Take responsibility, even if it wasn't all you. Like, you're in that position. With great power comes great responsibility. With great promotions comes additional responsibilities. And I thought, that's what you should do. And to watch him just fall to the floor, dead. Apology accepted, Captain Nita, which is a great Vader joke line, too. Vader's got a dark sense of humor. I love that, and I'm terrified by that moment. Maybe even more than the also one.
Yeah, because he also went Earl Jones just saying "F around and find out."
And, it totally is, and the Oz one. It's like you immediately. I think I've always liked Piet because he ain't the annoying one. like you said, we've all worked with Oz.
Yep,
and so you're almost root when it happens. You're like, yeah, get that guy out of here. but the Nita one is just it's heartbreaking from a certain point of view.
Yeah, I think maybe just because it's such a short scene, but the way he's coded is just sort of like, you know, within the Empire, young guy doing the right thing, filling out the forms, and like, wow, clearly the way to survive is to be Piet, to be, you know, the snaky whisper guy.
because he could have been like, you know, Lord Vader demands an update on the pursuit. All right, you're the blame. What's your name? Covington. All right, Covington, I'm going to go report your name. No, he doesn't do that. All right, yep. He gulps and goes, oh, here we go. And you know, we know Vader's been doing this to the point where they couldn't even do it in Return of the Jedi because on screen he'd done it too much. But even they dress it in the comics where Palpatine's like, stop killing my officers, man.
you got to pick and choose. Pick and choose. Yeah. Yeah, I love that. That management conversation. Like, how to be a Sith Lord, but still be reasonable. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I think for me, like I said, a lot of them came flowing out. I think it's because it's something I don't think about as much, but I do love a lot of them came out. But I think Krennic really did take what was around the edges and make it crystal clear. I've made lots of jokes about it's funny that it feels like he's a frustrated middle manager and that he's in a business meeting. And that's funny in the context of Star Wars to go to Darth Vader's angry lava castle and have like a business meeting. But that is the point. Like you were saying. So I think my favorite moment is probably Krennic saying, "We stand here and it's my achievement, not yours." Because it so drives home that trap of being all about I'm trapped in this machine and I can only get validation from this machine, but this machine is cruel and it's just about dominance, and Tarkin has more power, so he'll just take it from me, you know?
Yeah.
And that's the life and the world that I've kind of blindly committed myself to, right? Mm-hmm. That he's just left there standing and screaming in this kind of it's totally true. It is his achievement and also totally impotent. And Tarkin's like, cool, doesn't matter. I have more power.
Yeah.
Bye.
Yeah.
You know, and to just see his frustration. And who among us has not at some point in our lives felt like somebody else took credit for our work, right? And you want to do exactly that, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. 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 Not, again, it's never rooting for Krennic, but man, there's been so many times I just love it. Ben Mendelsohn finding all those layers and you know, in a shoot that was infamously reshot, as we all know that reshoot word. He's such a great performer, without a doubt. I just love the layers he puts into it, even to that final moment. It's just like, of course this would kill me.
Yep. Oh, it's beautiful. Yeah. So many great Krennic lines. All right. Great question, Jay. We will revisit it more unless, Ken, there's anything else that you would like to say about Imperial officers right now.
No, I think, you know, years ago I did a best Imperial officers, but that was just a name list. I think we are going to revisit this on Ranked. That's going to be fun.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of fun moments to discuss. But for now, we're going to go to our final question from Perry Wakefield. Perry says, after watching the Book of Boba Fett, I have some thoughts. What do you think the effect of Grogu choosing the armor over the lightsaber is on Luke? We know Luke trains Leia and she chooses not to be a Jedi. And now Grogu chooses not to be a Jedi. Does this affect Luke as he is rebuilding the Jedi Order, and does it affect him while training Ben Solo? I think this could start to show us why Luke thinks it's time for the Jedi to end in the sequels. Thanks, and keep up the great work. We talked about this a little bit amongst all the great conversations about Luke and attachment, but I really appreciate how laser-focused Perry's question is about, is Luke bummed by Grogu's choice? How does it affect his psychology and play into his future training choices? Where do you go with this, Ken?
Yeah, and going back to that Grogu moment when this discourse was happening, I think we talked a little bit about just his lesson in attachment for Luke again, right? And letting go of his ideas of how this is supposed to go. I've always, especially with Ahsoka being like, oh yeah, Grogu's going to be the first student. Luke was probably really excited. I got one.
He's building, he's physically building. Well, his robots are physically building. He's starting it. He's like, all right, great.
Yeah. And I think he understands. I think it's this weird balance of, I think he understands it. He can let it go. The Leia one probably was very tough for him, but, probably accepted on some level. I think it's important in life. You don't always have to have full understanding of someone to have compassion and empathy for them. Just have the support and just understand that that's you getting out of their way. And that I think that's important with the Leia one, the Grogu one. But I have you have to wonder if he gets disheartened. And does that create any, I don't want to say shortcuts, but just – where his vetting changes, his I don't want to say bringing in students of lesser skill but higher drive, but you know what I mean, of just like, all right, I want to make sure I find someone who wants to be here, and that might cause him to look for different kind of students, but definitely I think that creates I'm sure you'll go into it more, Joseph, but just like, he clearly values his students' choices, and that's something that probably has some great conversations with Ahsoka about, let me tell you about the Jedi Order. Let me tell you about choices and how powerful that is. So that kind of drives him forward, but it's gotta hurt on some level, and it's an ego battle. And how can he control his ego, his bruised ego?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really fun to think about. I think I've seen some memes that are fun, and I've seen some people kind of bashing Luke for like, great Jedi teacher, two swings, right, two strikes, right. But for me, I think of it as a triumph with Grogu, the more I think about it, because I think Luke was left with the mission from Yoda to pass on what you learned. And Luke learned a lot of things, but I think one of the things that he learned is that you have to choose to be a Jedi. It's not a casual thing to do. It's not a thing to do just because your father once was one. Luke chooses to be a Jedi. I think an important thing that he is passing on is not just how to access the Force, how to commune with it, all the great lessons that he clearly taught Leia, and we see him teach Grogu, but I think one of the things that he learned to pass on, that being a Jedi, is for the deepest commitment, the most serious mind. And I really think that's in line with a lot of things, a lot of great interview clips with Lucas that are going around about you choose to be a Jedi, you choose to give up, different things so that you can focus on this. It's even a lot of great storytelling in the High Republic books about kids are taken young because that is the Jedi way, but you still have to choose the Force. You got to question it and choose it yourself. So I think Luke is on the right path with Leia of saying, hey, this choice isn't right for you. Then I respect that, because you have to be committed. You have to choose this. He so wants Grogu to be a good student. He wants to be a good master to him, but he sees that truth that Grogu's distracted. It's not about you can't have a friend. It's that you're not here. You're not present. Your connection to this guy is going to make you want to lash out. Your pain at missing him is going to make you want to lash out. This might not be great for you. Are you sure you want to do it, kid? And the kid's like, yeah, no, I don't. Where I want to go do it my own way. And Luke's like, cool. Luke doesn't make it about himself. He makes it about what giving the choice back to Grogu, right?
Yeah.
So I think the way that this connects to other things is that we see in that Rise of Kylo Ren comic book that Luke does have a good school going, and it seems like a lot of those students there are relatively trained, active Jedi going about the galaxy doing things. So
They got ships.
He clearly did have success. I think the way I'm thinking about it, and we'll see what the future storytelling says, I think it's that where Luke fails is he learns good lessons with Leia and Grogu that the student has to choose, and I think he ignores that when it comes to Ben. Because it isn't necessarily Ben's choice. The little bits of storytelling we have is really implied that Leia wanted him to train with Luke. And I think, you know, the hubris that Luke's talks about in The Last Jedi of his desire to train his nephew because of that mighty Skywalker blood, I think what Luke is upset with himself about is that he made the training about himself, that he, Luke, wanted this. He thought it would help Ben. Maybe there's a little bit of like, I want to truly pass on what I've learned and continue this great heritage of Skywalkers. And I think there's a very good chance that obviously Ben was being manipulated by the voice of Palpatine, but I think there's a good chance that Ben didn't want to be there. He did not want to be taken from his parents. Maybe he didn't want to try to live up to the legend of Luke Skywalker. And I think unlike what happened with Leia and Grogu, where he gave the student the choice and let them walk away, that maybe Luke was clinging to Ben a little bit too much, right? Of wanting him to train and maybe not giving Ben the opportunity to walk away, which is maybe what Ben needed at that time.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and that's Rey kind of laying that truth on him, right?
You know, with
you didn't give him you made the choice for him. No, I think that's wonderful. And going back even before what you're saying of the Grogu moment, I am all aboard the train of saying that was quite a victory for Luke, and that's why I focus on the attachment lesson too. Of you know, it wasn't just about Grogu. It was just like Luke continuing to, hey, I have a great idea how this will go. If that's not the way it's going to go, I got to let it go. How often do we talk about that in real life? You know, I've mentioned the news show this week. We get a shoot on Sunday that just went wrong every which way at the beginning. We all had to go. We had some thoughts on how today was going to go. It's not going to go that way. And so I absolutely think it's a victory for Luke, which would make a lot of sense if you put aside those lessons because of whatever that X factor is. And the Skywalker blood is probably X factor.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, I think it's in the episode so much when he's looking to Ahsoka for guidance, right? And he's clearly got a little bit of an attachment, a fondness, Luke, to Ahsoka. And because he asks, will I see you again, right? Just really obsessing about the future. And she's like, we'll see. Yeah. You know, so I think that to me, it is coded as a victory because it isn't. It isn't don't have friends.
Yeah.
Don't care about people. Don't love people. It's this specific attachment is distracting you and making it so you can't do the things you need to do in order to become a Jedi. So, I think I'm totally on board with this question. Great question from Perry. And I'd love some more storytelling about Luke's training of Ben. But to me, that's the big answer is that for right now that Ben maybe needed to walk away and Luke maybe wanted and hoped to have this be a big success. And it's, you know, it's Luke's initial folly with Rey. Like, finally, after all of this journey, here's someone who needs and wants to be trained. He's like, I've had too many bad experiences.
Yeah.
Nope. And then, you know, that's his great triumph in Last Jedi and Rise of Skywalker. He's like, all right, finally somebody who wants this.
I'll
be there for you.
Yeah. And look, if it's not because you mentioned the Jedi school was pretty robust at the time. We see that comic, the start of the comic. If Rey is the only victory, which again, not the case, then that's the big victory he needed to have. So
there you go. Yeah, absolutely. It all works out in the end. Anyway, great question. I'm sure we'll talk about that more, but that's it, Ken. We have answered the questions of the Force.
Oh, great stuff. Love all the questions. Thank you for reaching out to us. And if you have a question for us, there's a lot of ways to reach out on Twitter at Force Center Pod. We usually put a question pin tweet up there. Just we'll put it up there and gather questions from there. So you can find us there. You can also go to Instagram and YouTube as well. Facebook page is Force Center Podcast. You can find us on Acast, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and a whole lot more. Just search and you'll find us. Merch available at tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter. And you can support us directly at patreon.com/ForceCenter. You can follow me at CatNapsock or go to my website, CatNapsock.com. Big show on June 4th, comedy show at the Troubadour. If you are local to LA, you want to see Big Show, Ryan Sickler headlining, Mark Ellis hosting, me and a bunch of other wonderful comics performing at that historic venue. Ticket information is on my website. Joseph.
Yeah, you can find me Twitter, Instagram, TikTok is at Joseph Scrimshaw, and you can check out my website, josephscrimshaw.com, for all of my comedy adventures. But for now, that is Questions of the Force, from Grogu to Krennic to Kenobi and back again. We've had a lot of fun. Thank you all for the questions. That is Questions of the Force.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.